reading from Srimad Bhagavad Gita as it is translated and purported by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. We're going to read today from chapter 13, which is entitled The Nature, the Enjoyer, and Consciousness, text 16. Bahirantascha bhutanam acharam charamevacha sukshmatvat tat abhigeyam dhurastam chantikechatat. Translation: The Supreme Truth exists outside and inside of all living beings, the moving and the non-moving. Because He is subtle, He is beyond the power of the material senses to see or to know. Although far, far away, He is also near to all. Please repeat. The Supreme Truth exists outside and inside of all living beings, the moving and the non-moving. Because He is subtle, He is beyond the power of the material senses to see or to know. Although far, far away, He is also near to all. In Vedic literature, we understand that Narayan, the Supreme Person, is residing both outside and inside of every living entity. He is present in both the material and the spiritual and the material worlds. Although He is far, far away, still He is near to us. These are the statements of Vedic literature. Asino dhuram rajati shayano yati sarvata. And because He is always engaged in transcendental bliss, we cannot understand how He is enjoying His full opulence. We cannot see or understand with this material senses. Therefore, in the Vedic language, it is said that to understand Him, our material mind and senses cannot act. But one who has purified his mind and senses by practicing Krishna consciousness in devotional service can see Him constantly. It is confirmed in Brahma Samhita that the devotee who has developed love for the Supreme God can see Him always, without cessation. And it is confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita, also 11.54, that He can be seen and understood only by devotional service. Bhaktya tu anandaya sakya. Om Magyanati Mirandasya Ginangana Salakaya Shakshuru Militanjena Tasmai Sri Guru Venamaha Panchakal Patarvis Chakra Sindhaveva Chapatitanam Pavaneva Vaishnava Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sri Gaura Bhaktarinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Ram Hare Ram 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 Hare Hare Bahirantascha bhutanam acharam charameva cha. Here Sri Krishna is saying that all the living entities, bhutanam, there are two types, the moving and the non-moving, acharam and charam. Now this is very interesting because when you go to your biology class, people never classify living beings as moving and non-moving, isn't it? They just tell you insects, aquatics, mammals, blah, 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 but never moving and non-moving. So, in the Vedic understanding, like Prabhupada's explaining here, we understand that the whole material world is actually a manifestation of the spirit soul. Indirectly, but indirectly it's a manifestation of God, Krishna, Narayan, Vishnu. So in that sense, the classification of the living entities as moving and non-moving is very appropriate, because it is only through this classification that we can have a clue of what the living entity is all about. And in reality, even one of the theological premises of the Bhagavad Gita is that the transcendental living entity is as important as any other aspect of the Absolute Truth. In the beginning of the Gita, in the introduction of the Gita, Srila Prabhupada mentions that you cannot understand God unless you understand five aspects of the Absolute. And one of those aspects is the transcendental living entity. So understanding God necessarily involves the understanding of ourselves. We cannot understand God without understanding ourselves. This is why Krishna himself, the Lord, the Supreme Personality of God himself, he emphasizes at the very beginning of the Bhagavad Gita, emphasizes the transcendental status of the soul. The whole chapter, second chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is explaining in so many different ways, giving so many different analogies, explaining very meaningful ways what the soul is all about, isn't it? Krishna explains, you know, the soul cannot die, the body only dies. Then he says that the soul is different than the body. And then he gives so many analogies, just like when you put on new dress, and eventually the dress worn out, you gotta change the dress, but you remain the same. So Krishna himself, being the Supreme Spiritual Master, he himself set the stage by saying, hey Arjun, first of all you have to understand yourself, who you really are, what you are all about. Then you can understand about what this world is all about, the three modes of material nature. Then you can understand what time is, kala. And then you can understand what karma is. And finally, you can understand who God is. And Krishna said, and even more final than that, you can understand that that God is me. That's the Krishna's progression of enlightening the world. So here in this verse of the Bhagavad Gita, you know, midway through the whole 18 chapters, Krishna is emphasizing again, he's saying that the living entities, the bhutanam, they are of all kinds, of all types. And Krishna here is referring to the coverings of the material the coverings of the living entity, meaning the material bodies. So the trees that you see outside right here, these are living entities. The birds are living entities. The insects are living entities. They are all classified, those that move and don't move. The trees don't move. So all the vegetable world, pretty much, is the non-moving living entities. And the moving living entities are all that move. The insects, birds, human beings, mammals, fish, like that. And Krishna is saying that Bahir antascha bhutanam. Bahir means outside and antash means within. Within and without. So how is that possible? Somebody might say. Well, first of all, people are having a hard time understanding that God resides within the heart of all living beings. Usually in the material world, because we are so conditioned and so polluted, so contaminated by the bodily concept of life, we think that only those who believe what I believe are really, that God is in their hearts. Those who do not believe what I believe, they're destined to hell, condemned, damned for eternity, burning hell for eternity, like that. So you have all kinds of sectarian views on the basis of the material body, where God resides. But here Krishna is saying in the Gita, he's saying everyone, whether you're whatever your religious system, whatever your religious belief may be, Krishna is saying, I reside within your heart. And even with those who do not believe anything, I reside within their hearts. And even those who are not even human beings, I reside within their hearts. And even those living beings who cannot move, I reside within their hearts. So Because Krishna doesn't discriminate. Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead upon whom all living beings survive. In fact, we cannot survive without Krishna's intervention at every step, at every moment. We are constantly, our existence is contingent upon Krishna every day. Even though we don't recognize it or even though we forget it, but actually everything is being taken care of by the different energies of Krishna. And this is the way to understand when he says that I am inside and outside of all living beings. Now, what does it mean to be outside of all living beings? Again, these are whatever you see in the world, according to the philosophy of the Upanishads, specifically the Gita Upanishad, according to the statements of the Upanishads, whatever you see in the world is just a different energy of God, different energy of Brahman. That's all it is. It's nothing. Nothing is independent from Brahman. Sarva kalvidam brahmam, goes the Vedic saying, that whatever you see, whatever exists, whatever even don't see, is Brahman. So, in that sense, whatever we are witnessing is our different energies of Krishna. And through his energies, Krishna directly, sometimes directly, but most of the time indirectly, Krishna carries on the material manifestation. So it is in that sense, it's just like when a father sends his children to school, right? Nobody can see this, but what people see is as a kid comes to school. And they think, oh, well, the kid is coming to school. But actually behind this event that a kid is arriving at the school, there is a father who's paying the bills, isn't it? Or a mother, anyway, parents who are paying the bills. And even though they may go to public school, well, people still pay taxes. So indirectly, the father or the parents is responsible for these children showing up at the school. So similarly, even though we don't see God present in the material world, we have a hard time, actually Krishna is present in the material world, but we are having a hard time recognizing that. But we should understand first that just as a child shows up in a school is the indication that there is parents behind this child, or there is some kind of guardians footing the bill for this child. Similarly, when we see the manifestation of this material world before our eyes, it's actually because Krishna is paying the bills. God is responsible for those, for the everything. Now, of course, God, like Prabhupada explained so many times, Krishna doesn't have to be here. Just like you don't have to be in a school every time your child goes to school. You can go on with your own affairs. But indirectly, through your energies, you're participating in your child going to school. Similarly, Krishna, even though he has his own private life, like Prabhupada is saying here in the purport, Krishna is busy enjoying transcendental bliss. He's occupied. He's got his own show to run. His private life, his friends, his entourage. But yet, at the same time, simultaneously, Krishna is taking care of this whole cosmic manifestation in which you and I are participating. So it is in this sense that God is outside of everything. Even in the material world. Prabhupada says here that he resides in the material world and in the spiritual world. In the spiritual world, Krishna runs his private life. In the material world, Krishna is taking care of all of us, all living beings. And so, the second part of the verse here, Shismakshata abhigyayam durastam chantike chatat. Krishna is saying that because I am subtle, because I cannot be seen and understood with material senses, I am beyond the power of all the material senses. And then he says, although I'm far, far away, I'm also very near. I'm very close. This is very much the language of the Upanishads, because it may seem contradictory. We don't have in our experience of somebody who can be simultaneously here and not here at the same time, do we? We don't. So logically, in our own little conditional mind, in our own limited understanding, we cannot conceive of a person who can be near to us and far away from us at the same time. That's not possible within the limits of logic. Either you're here or you're not there. So how is it that God can exist like that, nearby and far away? Very much the language of the Upanishads. Again, it is the same thing. It is said that it goes like this. For example, we have material bodies, right? And most of us understand that because we are a soul residing within the material body, the body seems alive. You know, we walk around, we move our eyes, we breathe, whatever, we smile, we cry, only because the soul is within the body. But the body is just a dress. It's just like when you see somebody running from far away, you only see the clothing moving, right? You see clothing moving, that's the first thing you see. But that's only because within those clothing, somebody is moving. So similarly, we smile, we cry, we move our eyes, we walk around, we run, only because we are within the body. So the power, the energy of these bodies are actually the souls. But the power energy of the soul, what makes you a soul, what makes us transcendental living entities, is actually the Krishna's residing within our hearts. So just like we are the source of energy of the body, Krishna is the source of energy of our own selves. It's in this sense that Krishna is very near to us. So, and how is it that he's far away? Well, when Krishna, it is explained in the Vedic theology, in the Vedic scriptures, that when this manifestation of this world comes about, it is actually an expansion of an expansion of an expansion of Krishna. Krishna personally doesn't show up here that much. He shows up here sometimes. Well, he shows up here today. But in general, Krishna is in his own realm. And it is only the Vishnu expansions. First of all, actually, Krishna expands into Vishnu forms within the spiritual world. And each and every planet within the spiritual world has an expansion of Vishnu. But when there is a need to create the material world, there is an expansion from Sankarshan. And that's called Karanakashaya Vishnu, that enters into the material world. Actually, dormant. At that time, the material world is dormant. There is no activity, there is no time in existence. And then from Karanakashaya Vishnu expands Shidrakashaya Vishnu, Garbhakashaya Vishnu, that enters in each and every universe. And with each and every universe, there is still a further expansion of Shidrakashaya Vishnu that enters into each and everyone's heart. So in reality, we're walking around with Vishnu in our hearts. Shidrakashaya Vishnu. So even though it's not Krishna himself, Swayam Bhagavan Krishna, residing in our hearts, but it's an expansion of an expansion of an expansion of Krishna. And it's in that sense that Krishna is far away. Now, the opulence and the powers of Vishnu are none different than Krishna's. That's why it's the same. Krishna and Vishnu are the same. But Krishna is engaged in his private life again. He's got his own transcendental mellows to engage in, and therefore he has this program of expanding himself in the different Vishnu forms by which he takes care of the material world and even the spiritual world. So it is in this sense that Krishna is far away. So the Krishna Consciousness Movement, the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, our only business is to give this knowledge to other people. We have no other business here. That's why we're in Florida, that's why we are in the United States, that's why we are pretty much all over the world, and other planets, who knows. That's our only business, is to enlighten people by giving this transcendental knowledge given to us by Krishna himself, by the great acharyas, that so that we may get out of this material world. Because the purpose, the goal, the aim of human existence is actually to free oneself from this bondage of material world, the material life. Because as living entities, again, this is another theological tenet of the Upanishads, as living entities, as jivas, as jiva-tattvas, as bhutas, as living entities, we are meant for a different environment, not the material world. Krishna gives an analogy in the Bhagavad Gita also that this material world is like a dirty pool. Now, if you take further this analogy, you realize that only animals live in dirty pools, right? Like pigs. Pigs enjoy being, you know, in the dirt, isn't it? When I went to India, I saw this a lot. So the pigs swimming and just having fun. But human beings, you know, when you see that, you say, you know, it's a dirty animal. So similarly, you're not meant to live in a dirty pool. As human beings, we're not meant for that. Yet Krishna gives us this analogy that this material world is like a dirty pool. So that's another indication from the Lord himself that this material world is not suitable for us as living beings, as jiva-bhutas. When we forget that we are jiva-bhutas, when we forget that we are jiva-tattvas, part and parcel of the Supreme Lord, yeah, anything goes. You can live in the stool, you can live in a pool, you can live anywhere. When we forget that, like they say in English, hell breaks loose. You can be an animal, you can be a human being, you can be a demigod, you can be an atheist, you can be whatever you want, because that doesn't matter anymore. But when you understand your transcendental nature, when you understand the value of who you are, or what you are meant for, that's when Krishna speaks Bhagavad Gita. Then it's to free ourselves. And Prabhupada speaks about here about in this verse, he speaks about cleansing, practicing the Krishna consciousness, purification. Purification simply means that we recognize that we are in the material pool, dirty material pool, and we just got to cleanse ourselves and go back to our normal state of existence. And that is spiritual engagement, spiritual life, spiritual activities. There is no, in the spiritual transcendental realization, there is no inaction. Just like a lot of religious systems in the world, they propose that because this material world is so nasty, is so bad, we got to annihilate ourselves. That's called voidism, nihilism. And that's pretty much the Buddhist idea is that because this material world is so much, it's full of suffering. Actually, the Buddhists are so intelligent that at least they can understand that they are suffering. That's very hard, actually, to understand that we are suffering despite all of our opulence, despite of our education, despite all of our economic advancement, despite all of our scientific advancement and technological advancement, all this stuff, to understand that you're actually suffering is very difficult. So we give the Buddhists the credit. At least they understand that they are suffering. But they drop the ball when they think that by destroying yourself, you eliminate suffering. This in English, another saying that you're throwing the baby with the bathwater, you know. You're bathing a baby, cleansing the baby, and when you got to get rid of the dirty water, you also throw away the baby. That's what the Buddhists do. the Buddhists realize, well, you know, we're suffering here. We've got to end this suffering, but let's kill ourselves. And the Mayavadis, the impersonalists, they are Buddhists in disguise. Because they are saying, well, why don't I have to kill myself, but I'd rather be, you know, doing nothing for eternity. Because they do not understand the transcendental position of Krishna. Krishna has got plenty of engagement. Krishna, God cannot be an idle person. That's impossible. How could God be an idle person? How can someone conceive that God is got nothing to do, that he's just sitting around doing nothing and growing old? No, God actually is very beautiful, very youthful. Eternally youthful, eternally beautiful, and eternally engaged. Eternally participating in transcendental activities. That's what Prabhupada explains in this purport. He says, and because he is always engaged in transcendental bliss, we cannot understand how a Krishna is enjoying in all his opulence. But yet, liberation really means to participate in Krishna's pastimes, in Krishna's activities, in Krishna's eternal bliss. That's what liberation is all about. That's the true nature of Jiva Tattva, and that's explained by Krishna himself in the Gita. So we are all engaged in this, in the pursuit of expanding the Krishna conscious movement, and we, by having these forums, Bhagavad Gita discourses, Bhagavatam discourses, we enlighten one another. We hear and we grow spiritually. So we humbly ask you to come and participate, to contribute in whichever way you can. Even if you can't contribute with anything, just showing up here is to your benefit, to our benefit, to the benefit of everyone. When we do something for Krishna, Krishna pays attention, because actually it is a great achievement. You see, this material world was conceived, designed, built under the basis of forgetfulness of Krishna. That's the peculiar attribute of this world. That this material world is set up for those who have decided to forget God. And everything here is a distraction from that aim. Everything here is meant to foster and to fuel this illusion that there's no God, I'm independent from God, this God's not around. That's the whole set of the material world. So when someone really breaks free from such bondage, Krishna pays attention, because it's a great achievement. When somebody even gives just one step towards Krishna like that, saying, well, you know, I understand something about Krishna, and you give your first step, Krishna notices right away. And Prabhupada said, Krishna gave 10 steps towards you. So whatever we can do for Krishna consciousness, for the Krishna consciousness movement, whatever we can do for expanding this Krishna consciousness movement, Krishna is noticing, and Krishna will not forget. Krishna will not forget. Krishna is always, he's omniscient. That's one of the attributes of God, being omniscient, all-knowing. And especially when somebody wants to reconnect with Krishna. That's what yoga is all about, really. Yoga means to connect, to link up. So bhakti yoga is really what Krishna is proposing in the Bhagavad Gita. And Prabhupada also makes a point to that. He said that it is confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita that we can see and understand Krishna only through devotional service, that's bhakti yoga. There is also a very beautiful verse in the Bhagavatam that goes like this: Vasudeva Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayoyata. That when we engage in this yoga of love, yoga of devotion with Vasudeva, Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vasudeva Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prajayita. The first thing that is going to show up in our lives is Ganayati Asu Vairagyam. The first things that manifest in our lives is knowledge of Krishna and detachment from this material world. Vairagyam, that's what it means. So in other words, we don't see the material world the same way anymore. We don't see the absence of God in the world anymore. We see the presence of God. That's really vairagya. Gyanansha yadahaitukam. So knowledge and realization of knowledge comes from engagement in Krishna's devotional service. There are so many ways that we can engage in Krishna's service. And the whole idea is that by the time you are achieving your goal, the first thing that you notice is that you're not forgetting Krishna anymore. Because you see, in the beginning of our devotional careers, we tend to forget Krishna sometimes, isn't it? When we first joined the Krishna Conscious Movement, you know, we were enthusiastic. But then we forget Krishna sometimes, and then we do all kinds of crazy stuff. But as time goes by, the remembrance of the Lord is permanent. That's called samadhi. When you are able to remember Krishna all the time, that's called samadhi. And that's the true nature of the soul, actually. That's the true nature of who we are. It's actually to be always in connection with Krishna, like Prabhupada said here. Actually, Prabhupada refers to Brahma Samhita. Pramanjana churito bhakti vilochanina santasada eva hridayeshu vilokayanti. It is said in the Brahma Samhita that those who have developed love of God, prema, pramanjana churito bhakti vilochanina santa sadaiva hridayeshu, within your hearts, actually is Krishna manifesting himself. It's not Vishnu anymore. It's not Sridhara Kashai Vishnu anymore. It's actually Bhagavan Krishna, Nandanandana Krishna, Jashalanandana Krishna, who actually manifested in your heart, and you can't forget Krishna anymore. So that's the whole purpose of Bhakti Yoga, is to reconnect with Krishna, to retain Krishna in our hearts, to see Krishna, to hear Krishna, to serve Krishna, to be with Krishna's devotees, to participate in preaching Krishna's glories. There's nothing else but Krishna. Any comments or questions? Yes, Prabhu. Can you stand up? I can't hear you. Yes. Yes, eventually yes. See, there are, now that topic of chanting the holy names of Krishna is a huge topic. But generally, when we begin the chanting of Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Ram Rama, Hare Hare, there is a clearing stage. There is a cleansing, like in purport it's mentioned in Prabhupada, that we have to cleanse our hearts. The beginning is cleansing. And this is in the beginning stages is that when we forget Krishna sometimes. We remember Krishna sometimes, but we forget Krishna sometimes. That's the clearing stage. Because the nature is we're still dirty. In the middle of the stage, we are cleansed, but we are solidifying our love for Krishna. But in the advanced stage, prema, Krishna prema bhakti, that's when you actually, through the medium of chanting the holy names of Krishna, you cannot forget Krishna anymore. Then you're with Krishna all the time. Because that's in reality our constitutional position. We are not independent from God at any time, at any stage, anywhere. Right now, we think we are independent from God only because of illusion. We walk around sometimes thinking, well, Krishna's not around me, so I can do something here. I can do something over there. But actually, when you actually see Krishna all the time, so how can you ignore Krishna? You can't. So that's the transcendental stage of chanting the holy name. But yes, if we stick to our chanting of Hare Krishna mantra, eventually, by our sincerity, by our tenacity of sticking to the vows, then Krishna will definitely manifest himself. But even without Krishna manifesting himself, Krishna is already taking care of you through the suspension of Sridhara Kashaya Vishnu. That's given. That's whether you chant Hare Krishna or not. Sridhara Kashaya Vishnu is already taking care of you. Any other comments, questions? Yes, Prabhu. I understood the first part, the second part of your question. I understand that you were saying that if there's a danger while chanting, trying to see Krishna. Either mood is healthy. Because in reality, there is many ways of seeing, like we would discuss. Actually, even I mean, seeing, even in the English language, I think it has different connotations, isn't it? There is the biological seeing of the eye itself. The biological organ of the eye can see in the presence of light. But there is also many ways of seeing things that does not involve a biological sight, isn't it? Similarly, in Sanskrit, we can see Krishna in many ways. Actually, the fact that like when you're chanting Hare Krishna, for example, you can also have a picture of Krishna with you. You're seeing Krishna, actually. Even though it's a picture of Krishna, Prabhupada used to give this example. Like, there's no difference. Like when you have a picture of a person you love, your beloved, your mother, your child, your spouse, whatever, you have a picture of your beloved, even though you know that the picture is not your beloved in and of itself, but somehow or other you have the same feelings, isn't it? It's not that you're going to, you know, toss it around and lay it down in a dirty place. No, it's your daughter, it's your son, it's your mother, whatever. You keep it in a nice frame. Similarly, Krishna's picture, Krishna's murti, is none different from Krishna in that sense. And therefore, he can reciprocate with you. So there's no harm in trying to see Krishna when you're chanting the holy names. But you can actually see Krishna faster if you chant the holy names but with an attitude of service. And that's the whole purpose here. Any other comments? Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.